Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marchetti, and it is a Monday afternoon, and it's just myself today, just like last Monday, kind of recapping the round that was in the A-League Men. We already kind of did our review of the Western Victory game. That was on Friday, on the Friday pod with Jake Hollab. So really, I've only got four games to kind of run the rule over. And to be honest with you, I'm not really going to, you know, dissect them game by game. More some general thoughts that I got out of the weekend. We'll start with it in a moment. But first of all, obviously, Front Page Football Podcast is very much back in full swing. The aim is to get these out three times a week. So, you know, one today on the Monday, then another one on the Wednesday, and then one on Friday. I'll try and stick to it as best I can. Obviously, you know, other commitments permitting, of course, you know, still being a university student and whatnot. So, yeah, but still got plenty of things to get through here. This shouldn't be too long, a podcast. Every time I say that, it ends up to be about, you know, an hour or something. So maybe I shouldn't say that. But let's kick it off then. So first game, I wasn't actually able to watch this on Friday night, but Newcastle versus Adelaide United. Adelaide finally getting a win, winning 1-0 through Luka Jovanovic's strike. Honestly, not much to say here from an Adelaide perspective. You know, good on them. They got their win. In fact, stay tuned for Wednesday's pod. There might be a bit of Adelaide United conversation on there with a certain journalist who covers Adelaide United. But point is, you know, with them at this stage of season, it's kind of like any win that you get now is more of a consolation more than anything, and you kind of look into next season. But good for Jovanovic, got his goal, well taken. You know, Adelaide could have had more in this game based on what I saw going back over the highlights and stuff. But Newcastle would say that they could have equalised right at the end with Ryan Scott. But the biggest story coming out of this is from the Newcastle side and what's been going on with some ownership stuff with them. I mean, what hasn't been going on in that department? It's been going on for 4 years. But first of all, let's go back to the game. So post-match, Rob Stanton, I listened to the press conference. So he's been relatively calm all season. And I mentioned this last week. He's been pretty calm. He's been kind of staying the course, understanding the situation. He's got a lot of young players and trying to basically build a philosophy and identity with the team and improve some players while you're at it, right? That you can maybe sell on or whatever. But these last couple of weeks, you know, there does seem to be a little bit of a shift with some increasing frustrations. I think in this presser, if you go back and listen to it, there was like a slight dig at the APL essentially and maybe others about, you know, the ownership situation and about how it's basically taking too long, and I think the term he used was clarity that needs to be provided. And you know, the way I look at it with him, just on Rob Stanton, I actually think he's a great fit for the team they got right now, and as a leader, I think he takes a lot of ownership. I think he's very empathetic. I think he's a great talker. And you can see that, you know, Newcastle on the pitch, we'll get to off the pitch in a moment, but on the pitch, like, their performances haven't been that bad this season in terms of they've been in pretty much every game. I'm probably, you know, missing out a couple there. And, you know, we've seen a lot of excitement with, you know, Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, with Clayton Taylor, with Lucas Moragas, you know, guys who, you know, who knows if they'll be there next season. But the point is that there has been, in patches, something there where you go, okay, like, there is a more of an identity. They've run with this 4-2-2-2, which is obviously very, you know, Sydney FC, Graham Arnold, Steve Corriger-esque, right? Which, of course, Stanton was Corriger's assistant last season at Sydney. So, you know, he's obviously from that mold. But I think he understands that it's a process with what he's got to work with, right? The real frustrating thing for me looking at this is how how much can he really have a long-term view with this? Because, like, let's cut to the chase. How much longer are the Newcastle Jets going to be an operating football club in the A-League? Like, that's where we're getting, right? So let's go then to this. Daniel McBreen, a 10 football commentator, tweeted, or was it yesterday, that that, you know, he's hearing that the takeover's kind of fallen through. I'm just going to say this. I'm not going to get too specific with it. The information that I've heard on this is not great either. If you had to ask me what's the kind of percentage split of, like, how much are you swaying to Newcastle will not be a club in the A-League next season to Newcastle will have an owner, I would say it's probably 70-30 towards Newcastle stinking. And this is an absolute shame. I mean, you know, we've got guys obviously at FPF writers who are from Nui, and, you know, talking to them, like, it's demoralizing, right? Like, this is a club who have had so many great moments in the A-League. It's a club who it's actually a very football rich area, the Newcastle area, definitely based on what the guys tell me. But you can see it, right? Like, they definitely, you know, obviously we know rugby league and stuff is big there, but you can see when the Jets are playing well and there's young guys who are getting minutes and things like that, you know, that they love someone like Archie Goodwin, for example, like, they'll get around their team. The problem is that for whatever reason, the Australian football and the A-League and the governing body, whatever it is, like, just seems to let down that area. Because, I mean, here's the thing, right? It seems like the consortium of clubs that have basically been holding up Newcastle for this extended period of time, for the last two seasons, right? Which my understanding seems to be that it's Sydney FC, the Western Sydney Wanderers, and I think it was Western United who were helping out, but I think maybe they're not anymore. Point is, right, that now you go independent as a league, you've got clubs that are struggling financially that basically need to feed off of other clubs to stay afloat. Okay, fine. And now those other clubs are going, well, hang on a minute, this club hasn't been sold yet. We're still putting money into it. Fuck this. We're not putting money into this anymore. And now we want our money back. Like, what's going on here? This is a waste of our time. And it's kind of like, well, what did you guys think was going to happen, right? Like, you know, as soon as you start to get other clubs basically helping out with other clubs and it's just a mess, right? Like, it's always going to happen where sooner or later you're going to want your money back. Like, oh yeah, like, someone like, if we say the Wanderers are a part of this, you know, funnery, like, yeah, Paul Letterer is just going to walk away and be like, oh, you know, that's fine. Like, I don't, yeah, like, I put all my money into Newcastle, but, like, that's fine. You know, just sell and I'll be fine. I don't want anything back. Like, of course he's going to want something back, right? Sydney FC, of course they want something back. Like, it's just the lack of foresight and the stupidity of the independence part of the A-League from this perspective is just really stupid, right? And, you know, like, maybe you could say, you know, hang on a minute, maybe, like, the plan was they were only going to fund it for maybe a season or two at most, and everyone was kind of, you know, pretty certain that Newcastle were going to get sold. But, I mean, when did, I don't know off the top of my head, what was it, 2019 or early 2020 when Martin Lee, you know, forfeited his license essentially of the Jets. Like, this is like a 4-year thing that's going on. Like, it's not like 2 years ago you could have said, like, I don't know if the Jets are going to be getting sold, right? Like, it's just been a mess. It's just been a total mess. And, you know, look, there's been reports out there that there was a report, what, like a few months ago from FTBL that, you know, some Italian guy was interested in it. Shane Matisse, the CEO, had a message basically to fans a few weeks ago where he kind of suggested that something was around the corner, which is the other thing too, where, like, there's either two things happening now. Either he's trying to lull fans into some false sense of hope and maybe it wasn't that close, or maybe it was close and something's happened at the last minute here, which is more in line, to be fair. It does seem like it's more down that avenue where either one of the other clubs maybe who was funding the sale, or maybe it's Quartermentha or whatever, some party in this has said, well, this isn't right, or we're not getting what we want, whatever the case may be. But, like, if you're a Jets fan, like, you'd just be absolutely dejected. Like, what's the point? And the thing is, right, okay, let's say, I don't know, this consortium of clubs, these three clubs that I mentioned, or I think it might be two now, just Wanderers in Sydney, I don't know for sure. You know, don't aggravate me, don't quote me on that. But if the other clubs pull the funding, like obviously there's no money coming in. If the APL, I don't know, finds some other way to keep this afloat, and it's just kind of like, but the point is, it's like, okay, so what we're doing is we're just keeping something afloat that's clearly got no interest from the outside world of actually becoming stable, right? Like, you know, with Perth, for example, we had one takeover fall through, but like it seemed kind of very early on that, you know, that was going to get sold pretty quickly. And then we obviously had Pellegra come in and he took over, and now Perth are kind of back, you know, where they want to be. But like, you have to ask yourself with the Jets at this point, when does it just become like insanity, right? Where you're just doing the same thing of like, we got to give money to it to prop it up and make sure it stays afloat. But at some point it's like they're staying afloat, and then there's kind of like staying afloat with no real future around the corner, right? And it's a real shame because, like I said, I mean, that club, the Jets, have been a staple for the league, right? This is not good for my A-League knowledge. I'm actually going to have to confirm this. If I'm not mistaken, made the first grand final against the Mariners. I'm pretty confident of that. But, you know, you think of, like, yeah, like those earlier teams that had, like, Joel Griffiths and stuff. And then, of course, more recently with the Ernie Merrick season and Naboo and when McGree was there. Like, you know, the Jets have had some great moments in the league, right? And I don't know. The other thing around this is, I just said the Jets, not the Jets, Newcastle is a pretty football-rich area. Like, could we still get a Newcastle team where, yeah, maybe the Jets sink, but someone else comes along and approaches the APL, I don't know, about an expansion franchise, expansion, if you want to use that term, of essentially creating a new Newcastle team. I don't know. It's A, ridiculous that it's taken this long, but also B, ridiculous that this hasn't reached some sort of conclusion, whether it be the dreaded conclusion that nobody wants of Newcastle sink, or whether it is the conclusion everyone wants, which is that they get bought. But I don't really have any further thoughts. All I would just say is that it's not looking great. It's not looking great, and it looks like it's affecting Rob Stanton, and it's probably affecting the team and the players as well. He did also seem to suggest in that press conference after the game that there's probably going to be a few players moving on at the end of the season. Like, let's be honest, if you had to guess, that's probably Clayne Taylor. It's probably Apostolos Stamatopoulos. Maybe it's Lucas Moragas as well. Basically, the younger talents there, or the consistent talents in someone like Apostolos, who are probably not going to be there next season. You know, so that kind of is probably adding some extra tension around the environment. If you got players who are probably thinking of other clubs and thinking of their moves next season, it's just not great. It's just not great. Okay, let's move on to actually a game I really want to talk about in depth, and is probably less of a morbid chat. So, Wellington Sydney, awesome game. This was kind of going into it, it was like, this is a big game in terms of another opportunity for Sydney. We saw them go to the Mariners and kind of, you know, shock them with that 3-1 win a few weeks back. And it was kind of another litmus test for Sydney, who I think are still, right now I've got it kind of Mariners, Wellington in that top tier. And then Sydney for me is kind of in their own tier just behind them in terms of championship credentials. I have Sydney ahead of Melbourne Victory, ahead of MacArthur. I think their press is something that no other team in the league has. And I think that, yeah, if that can maintain going into the finals, that they can do damage. However, for the first 20 minutes of this game, like, it looked like that was doing damage, and it looked like the Knicks, you know, had no answer to it. And kind of all the not worst fears you had about the Knicks, but more like, you know, we look at them, and even Chief has mentioned this, where, like, you know, they're not necessarily a side, I mean, they can play out of press and they are good playing out from the back. That's not necessarily what I'm saying, but it's not probably like a hallmark of their play, right? Like, they're more transitional, they're more on the break, and that's where they've really made their name this season. But, and kind of when you saw that Sydney swarming press, and you saw, you know, those mistakes and possessions start to happen with Wellington, and you just thought, okay, like, this is interesting now, this first 20, because it seems like Wellington have kind of met their match in terms of, you know, a team which isn't going to let them play out from the back with their sort of W shape that they have with the two centre backs and the three sixes. Like, the Sydney are really making it hard for them. And then it probably should have been 2-0. Like, I don't know, I haven't had another look at that Corney Perkins disallowed goal again, but didn't seem a little bit questionable at the time. But probably should have been 2-0 up Sydney, right? And then Wellington, like, watching this game, like, they are like, look, I know nothing about boxing, but in my very limited knowledge about boxing, it seems like they were kind of like, it's like they're happy for the other team sometimes to kind of let them take a couple of jabs, right? Like, let the other team show their cards, show their hand first. Let's kind of phase out how they're playing. I remember a game really early in the season when they played Brisbane, and this was when Ross Aloisi was there right at the start. And Brisbane, similarly, like, they went to Wellington, they swarmed them at the start, and, like, Wellington couldn't handle it. And then, like, in the middle of the first half, suddenly Wellington kind of just, it was like something's obviously come, some adjustment from Chiefy on the sideline during the game has come, and they've gone, okay, this is how we're going to beat the press. And once they work it out, then they start to turn you the other way. And for Sydney, who have done a brilliant job in recent weeks of actually getting their high line right, and it's not too high, or they're not getting caught out, or they're squeezing the pitch at the right moments, they've done a fantastic job of that. But Wellington said, okay, but we're going to find the way to break this press and use our speed in behind, which we've got with Costa, Barbarousis, and we're going to hurt you still. And their ability to make the in-game adjustment and to respond when starting a game poorly or when the other team kind of starts to gain confidence is really incredible. And incredible for a team which, you know, we have to say has got no pedigree, right? Like, in terms of being in this position in the A-League, right? It's unbelievable. But guys are stepping up and really taking their mantle as you know, guys that can contribute for a team that can really win the premiership now. So they kind of wait for you. They waited for Sydney, and they realized early on, okay, we can't play out short here. We're going to have to bypass the press. I'm sure they did stuff during the week in terms of, okay, this is how they press. How do we get out? Who do we go to? What runners do we find? You know, all that sort of stuff. And they were able to execute it after that. And yeah, they just keep finding a way. And so some other players I want to talk about from Wellington. So Alex Rufer, first of all, was fucking incredible in this game. Like, absolutely incredible. And with him, like, I don't want to say no one's talking about him this season, but he has been increasingly more impressive to me. I never thought of him as a guy who would actually be able to kind of hold it down at the base of a midfield like this so well. You know, he's always been decent defensively. He's always been decent on the ball. It's lots been obviously native of his goal scoring, but he's clearly, as we can see, he's not, you know, he's not a goal scorer, he's a six, right? And for me, though, watching him in this game was how much his effort exemplifies the buy-in that Italiano's got from the whole team, right? Like, Alex Rufer is so committed. He's, you know, you saw it full time. He's the one, you know, going up to his teammates, you know, hyping them up, getting around the celebrations. He's the one, you know, getting around Alex Paulson when he makes a save or when Scott Wooten makes a last-ditch tackle, right? Like, he's a guy who's really leading, not just from a what captains should do in terms of, you know, getting around maybe some younger players and things like that, but leading with his performance too. Like, if I'm Finn Sermon and I'm seeing the way Rufer is diving into tackles, the way he's not letting him, you know, he's not losing 50-50s, and for me, you know, it makes me comfortable, right? And he's been fantastic. And I haven't thought about it and done like a big board or anything, but like, where would he sit in terms of sixes in the A-League at the moment? Because I do think he's just incredibly underrated, right? And he's maybe, like, I just feel like there's a, how do I say this? Like, not a sexiness maybe associated with him. Like, people think of Alex Rufer and they go, oh yeah, like stock standard sort of A-League midfielder. But it's like, seriously, watch the games. Like, he's been really good this season. So he's been excellent. Another guy we have to talk about, Costa Barbarouses. Amazing goal, the second one to win the game. And just with Barbarouses, I want to talk more big picture with him. So I was looking today. So he's clocked up now. So first of all, that's his 11th goal of the league season. So we're just talking with the A-League here, with his stats here. So 11 goals and 4 assists in 21 games this season. Now, that's now his equal second best scoring season in the A-League. 18-19, when he was at Victory, that was an Ola Toivonen team, if I'm not mistaken. And he got 14 goals that season in 27, and also with 4 assists. Now, there's that. So it's his equal second best when we talk about goals. He's 4 assists there. So he had 4 assists this season, 4 assists in the 2018-19 season, and he also had 4 assists back in 14-15 with his first stint at Victory. His first season in the first stint at Victory had 5 assists. This isn't one of his... It could end up being his best assist season too. Like, he's got 4 assists. His best season in the A-League for assists was 6, and he did that twice. So 2019-20 season with Sydney, and his second stint with Wellington, which was 16-17 as well. So, look, he's got 5 games left to basically score 4 goals, which would make him his best ever single scoring season in the A-League, and get 3 assists. So that would make his best, season for assists in the A-League. So basically league highs for a season in both of those categories. So there's that. But the other thing with him is he's now clocked up just over 1,800 minutes this season. So 5 games left, 5 times 90 if he plays every minute, and he might, because they're going for it, and they're going for the minor premiership. That's, I think, about 450 minutes. So he's probably going to clock up somewhere around the 2,200 mark for minutes. Now, his most minutes in a season was his third season in the league, which was his only season in Brisbane. That was under Ange in 2010-11, where he clocked up 2,401 to be exact. So 2,401. Second highest minutes, the 18-19 season. He was actually unbelievable that season when you actually go back and have a look at it. 2,333 with the Victory. So this is like, if you're doing like a Barbarouses sort of retrospect of how does this season rank in terms of his best ever seasons, like it's probably top 3, top 2, top 3. I mean, particularly, to be fair, if they do take out the minor premiership, that probably gives it more weight. But I mean, the other part is, like, he's 34. Costa Barbarouses is 34, and the minutes that he's clocking up, and not just that, but like the work ethic on Saturday, like the amount of running that's involved in constantly being that outlet, right, to break the press in the transition moments. Like, it's not easy. And he's consistently bringing that. It's fantastic. And, like, just Wellington in general, like, from Barbarouses, Rufa, Scott Wooten, like, these guys, man, like, they're fucking warriors. Like, that's the term when I was watching this game. Like, I had some dub on. There was another game on. Like, I had a couple games going, and I was just watching. Like, the endeavor to make sure the ball doesn't go in your net. Like, this shit like that. Like, it's something which clearly comes from the top with Italiano, but it's something that the players are obviously setting there too. Like, they've had this chip on their shoulder all year, and the way they scrap for everything. I'll go back to that term, buy-in. Having a level of buy-in, I think, in the A-League is absolutely huge. And Wellington have got that in spades. And I think, like, that was a nice reminder, I think, for me too, where I think some people maybe watching that first 20 minutes would go, ooh, like, Wellington are the wheels coming off. And, like, that was, for me, the game actually told us more about Wellington than Sydney. I'll get to a couple things with Sydney in a moment. But it kind of told you that, listen, don't disrespect Wellington, at all come finals time, because, like, you could be 1-0 up cruising at halftime, and then all of a sudden they've got the adjustments in the second half, and they come roaring back into a game. Like, that's the scenario I'd be worried about. I'd actually be worried about if I was playing Wellington, over two legs or in a grand final, for example. of actually being dominant in the first half against them and not taking your chances and not, you know, actually making the most of it, because you know that they're going to come out in the second half and have some sort of response. So, yeah, fantastic team, really. Okay, the word, actually, that's what I was going to mention too. The word I used for them was malleable, Wellington. So I still say, and maybe Phoenix fans are going to have me saying this, but I still feel the Mariners are the most complete team. I still feel in all phases of the game, I can trust them the most. So whether that is when they're on the ball, out of the ball, and both the transition moments, I still feel the Mariners have the biggest upside, I guess. And I still feel like, you know, the road goes through them because they are the champions, right? But Wellington are the most malleable. So their ability to kind of adapt to what the game gives them, for me, is the best in the league. And that comes from, you know, Chiefy's brilliance, really. And his ability to actually trust his players to execute what they want to do. So, yeah, two great teams, both of them as well. All right, a couple other things. Sydney. So, one thing about Sydney, and I'm actually just going to get out, you know, some of their recent results just to check this too. But the one thing about them where maybe they haven't had to face too much of the situation, I feel, definitely in recent games, is what do you do when you go 2-1 down or you go 1-0 down or 3-2 down and there's still 30, 40 minutes to play and you got a team like Wellington who's sitting back? What answers do you have? Because with Sydney, a lot of their goals of late, you know, and it was the same with the goal on the weekend, and even the goal against Brisbane, although that was more of a second phase, we saw against the Wanderers how many goals came from this, which is basically winning the ball high and capitalizing on mistakes, right? And when you do that, the opposition's spread out, they're out of position when they lose the ball, and it's easier to exploit the space and score. But Sydney, I think one area for them, if I was going through, you know, each team, whatever, and I had kind of a, what am I looking for going into this final stretch of the season, as issues for them to maybe not necessarily correct, but I just want to see more from them, is, yeah, when they're faced with a low block, basically, what are their keys to breaking that down consistently? Because I think that was interesting on Saturday. I didn't feel at any moment like Wellington were going to surrender that 2-1 lead. Like, they looked relatively comfortable, right? And, you know, obviously they got Paulson, and sometimes Paulson, you know, can bail them out sometimes, but because he's absolutely brilliant. But, you know, if teams in the final series or even down the stretch here the season decide, if they do get an early goal and decide for 80 minutes, 70 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever it might be, to just put 10 men behind the ball and soak up pressure, what answers does Sydney have for that? That's what I'm watching with them. That's all. So, yeah, creating space when you win the ball high is a lot easier than creating space when you've got comfortable possession against a low block. So it's a different proposition, and I'm interested to see how it goes. Last thing on this game, and then I'll take a quick break, is the Talay Chiefy bromance. I just love it. Like, I love it. Like, you've got two guys there, Inufuk Talay and Giancarlo Italiano, who, you know, clearly had a fantastic working relationship. That's obvious. But you can tell, like, they love what they do. They love what they do. Like, you could even see at full time, it's interesting, they went over and shook hands, and I was wondering if, like, Italiano didn't say anything to him because I feel like he knows him and he probably went, like, he's probably not going to want to talk because he's just lost. But then, like, 5 minutes later, the coverage kind of went back and they're on the field, like, talking, and you can even see Talay, like, pointing to spaces on the pitch, and I'm like thinking to myself, these two are fucking, like, talking about what just happened in the game and reflecting on the game and moments in the game. Like, it was hilarious, right? But as someone who coaches at a younger level and someone who kind of really appreciates the art of good coaching, right, I think it's fantastic to see two guys who are so passionate about it, and, you know, one can beat the other, and there's no, it's not personal, right? It's, they understand that's just business, and they're able to kind of still have that really strong personal bond. So, yeah, it's yeah, it's a really nice thing to witness, to be honest. So yeah, I think, if not mistaken, so that's 1-1 now, Talay and Chiefy this season, because Sydney won 3-1 against the Phoenix in December, end of the year, yep. And then the Phoenix have got them back with a 2-1 win here. Would be a very interesting semi-final matchup, maybe, over two legs in particular, for sure. So who knows? But yeah, basically, we've still got... So Sydney are playing the Mariners when we come back from the international break. So that's huge. I'm going to be definitely plugged into that. And then I think we've still got that Mariners-Wellington game to come, which is in Gosford. I believe that actually might be the week after that. So, I mean, you know, holy shit. Yeah, like, whenever two of these three teams play each other right now, for me, it's like must-watch viewing. Because for me, they're the three sort of... It's probably Mariners, Wellington in by themselves, and then Sydney are close behind as kind of the real contenders for me. So, yeah. Yeah, can't wait for those games after the break. All right, I am going to take a quick break to rest my vocal cords, and when I come back, I've got a couple other notes on the other two games from the weekend. Okay, coming back. So a couple other thoughts on Brisbane MacArthur and Perth Wanderers. So Brisbane and Perth kind of had two similar performances. I mean, these games are actually both really similar. Same results too, where, like, both of them will just be absolutely kicking themselves, right? Like, that's the type of losses where you go after that, the dejection of it is, after being so dominant, you know, in both games, kind of leads you to think, like, yeah, this just isn't happening when we talk about finals. As I just get the ladder up in front of me now to just confirm the standings and stuff. Like, with Perth, we'll talk about Brisbane first. So, like, the first half, it's weird because all the goals came in the first half, but the first, like, 20 minutes of that game, similar to what I just said about Sydney in the Wellington game, Brisbane killed MacArthur. Like, they were all over them. And, you know, kind of looked like they were able to do whatever they wanted. I think they, again, didn't take their chances when they came, and then, you know, conceded, yeah, kind of two poor goals. The second one was a nice finish by Rafa, Borges Rodriguez, but the first one, like, I don't know why they mentioned the commentary, I agree, Andy Harper did, where for some reason it looked like Florian Berenguer was marking Tommy Uzcock, or maybe because Brisbane were playing zonal, they were marking zonally, you know, Tommy Uzcock kind of just was able to drift into that sort of area where Berenguer was, and he just obviously was just able to overpower him for the goal, right? But yeah, the equaliser MacArthur got was completely against run of play watching the game. And Brisbane in the second half just kept coming. Waddingham had a huge chance, which, you know, he'll be kicking himself about. So yeah, massive chance, because they could have, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, they would have gone level with City, who at that time were six before the Wanderers obviously won. So they could have gone onto 29 there. The Wanderers did win, but as I'll talk about in the moment, you know, if that game went differently, Perth could have beaten the Wanderers. And, you know, you're looking at, yeah, the Raw kind of being in a position where they're only out of the six on goal difference. So they've been actually, you know, good under Zakovic, I have to say. I've been surprised. But yeah, I think what was exposed probably in that game was more some defensive vulnerabilities with them too. So yeah, I'll talk about Perth Wanderers in a moment. Just one thing, MacArthur, that I want to talk about. So they've now moved above Victory into third on wins. Fucking ridiculous tiebreaker. Anyway, and they're probably eyeing now, yeah, basically just a home final, elimination final, either third or fourth. That they're probably going to be happy with that. But in terms of with them, like, you know, it just felt when I was watching this game, it's like, how many times on the MacArthur this season have I felt that, yeah, they've kind of won a game or they've drawn a game where they didn't really probably deserve it based on chances and chance creation. So it led me to obviously going down an XG sort of rabbit hole with expected goals. And MacArthur, so this is now, there's A-League XG stats are kind of hard to source, I'll be honest. And there's only really one site I could find that kind of has it really in depth, and that's this site called Footy Stats. So I don't know how accurate it is, to be honest with you, but we're just going to go off it anyway. So it sounds about right, to be fair, when you look at it. So the XG, they've got all the XG stats here for all the teams. So MacArthur are third when it comes to... they've got the third highest XG versus actual goal scored difference, because, which in other words, means that they're the third most clinical team in the league. Second is Perth, and then the Phoenix are top, which is no real surprise there. But MacArthur, on average, this season, are creating 1.31 XG per game. So basically, yeah, they're creating enough to... They should be scoring a goal a game, right? Which is probably not... Well, I don't know. Maybe it's probably not reflective of a team that's, you know, third and actually had a pretty steady season. And then they're actually conceding 1.95 XG against per game, which is actually the highest in the league. So it's interesting, because you look at that and you think, when people talk about MacArthur, they think they're pretty... You know, yeah, they sit in, they're pretty solid defensively and stuff. It's like, I don't really know if they are solid defensively. I think that they have a way of playing, of course. They've got an identity with playing on the break a bit more and being more transitional. But I think mainly they're very clinical. And the reason I brought it up is because it bodes well going into the finals, right? Like, it's finals games, elimination final. You have to take your chances. You've got... And we know why they're clinical. They've got two players in Inshaman and Davia who exemplify that. And, you know, I think that should not be undervalued, basically, going into the finals. Like, because I just mentioned before the break about, you know, how Wellington, Mariners and Sydney, for me, are kind of above the rest. But MacArthur, like, that's something MacArthur have over the Victory, for example, right? Like, Victory are at the complete opposite spectrum of that. Victory are the second... They have basically the second worst... XG versus actual goals scored difference. So they're actually negative 0.23. So they create 1.87 XG per game and they concede 1.28. And yet, you know, they are, yeah, they just can't convert, as we've seen in recent weeks, right? So, and obviously Western are bottom of that, which kind of, yeah, speaks to John Aloisi's insistence that the performance has been good. They just haven't been able to score goals, and it's kind of true. So my point is, with MacArthur, if they're healthy going to the finals, if they're able to take their chances, which we have evidence that they can, like, you know, it's kind of a banana skin for any team coming up against them, right? So, it's in terms of some other stuff with the XG, whilst I got it here. So Sydney are actually creating the most on average at the moment, 2.04 per game, which is actually kind of insane. They're expected to score two goals a game, which is pretty good. Adelaide are actually second, so still on this list, but Adelaide also conceding 1.71 XG per game as well. So there's that. Wellington, incredibly, are only creating 0.98 XG per game. They're actually creating just less than one expected goal per game, which is insane. And we know, like, Perth are clinical because of Taggart, obviously. And the Mariners are kind of a bit more of in that middle range with this as well, which is kind of, yeah, they're quite steady, I would say, in that regard. So, yeah, it's fascinating, the XG stuff, when you kind of deep dive into it. And I was actually having a look at the players with the most XG too, and I don't know if... Yeah, so you can actually... Here we go, so XG total, yeah. The Jermaine and Davia are... So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, so Valer Jermaine and Ulysses Davia are 8 and 9 in terms of players with the most XG. Jermaine has created an XG total of 9.99 and he scored 11 goals. Davia, 8.05 and he scored 8. So, I mean, these two are just like, you know, completely overperforming. Davia's as expected. Jermaine's slightly overperforming his XG, but it kind of speaks to, you know, if you've got two experienced players with the quality that they have, who are able to take their chances. It kind of bodes well for you in the A-League. So that's my takeaway there too. All right, Perth. So Perth, and then also about the Wanderers side of that result, because this was a really fascinating game going into it. Of course, because all the noise around the Wanderers, obviously. And I'll get to them in a moment. But Perth, like, you could have watched... If you watched the Brisbane second half against MacArthur and then you watch Perth second half against Wanderers, like, I think Ruben Zakovic and Alan Stadgett probably have to call each other. Maybe they called each other this morning to just, like, you know... Like, what's the term? Like, drown their sorrows over the fact that their teams couldn't capitalize on their chances. Because, I mean, Perth completely had the Wanderers on the back foot in that whole second half. Wanderers go down once, pretty much, and score through Lockie Brook. And Stadgett just had this kind of dejected look on his face, right, towards the end, because he knew what a big chance that was. And for Perth, too, it's not just this week, right? Like, these last three games have kind of ended their season. They, like, and it's annoying, because if you're a Perth fan, like, you've had all this uncertainty with the ownership, and obviously that's been sorted, and you've had a disastrous start on the pitch this season. But then all of a sudden, you went into that Western game, which was now, yeah, 3 weeks ago, going, okay, we got Western and Newcastle, you know, go to Western, can we literally get one away win, right? Like, that'll be nice, or it would have been their second, because they beat the Wanderers away, ironically. But they go there, they play poorly, Western dominate them, and they lose 1-0 without really putting up that much of a fight. They had a couple chances, but no, they come back home. Okay, Newcastle at home, all right, we've got to win this, obviously. And they basically dominated for 60 minutes, as I spoke about last week, and they kind of get rescued by Taggart. And then this week, you're given another kind of layup where you've got this Wanderers club, which is just in complete disarray. There's all sorts of noise around them. And you don't kill it off. And, like, it would just be excruciating, right? They started poorly, Perth, they did. Wanderers were better in the first sort of 20 minutes or so. And then they came into it, they scored a nice goal through Taggart. And the second half was like, I was actually sitting there waiting for, okay, when are Perth going to score? When are Perth going to score? When are Perth going to score? And they just didn't do it. And, you know, even... Like, it's not just top leagues in the world, right? Even in the A-League, like, you don't capitalize, you get punished. So, yeah, like, those last three games are tough kind of when you look at it retrospectively, if you're a Perth Glory person. So, not good. One positive for them, some real positivity from their youngsters, I thought, in this game. So, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Magic Adunmi. Maybe I've got that spot on. I don't know. It felt nice coming off the mouth, rolling off the tongue. But I thought he looked good in possession this game, playing out. He's got some qualities there. Jaden Gorman looked decent. He kind of caused some chaos off the bench, and then Joel Anasmo has been really good all season coming off the bench. So they've got some young players there that are coming through too, which is good for them. And yeah, I mean, Daniel Benny, I know he hasn't scored yet, but I think we've seen a lot of progress from him, from definitely going back to the start of the season, right? And they've always got Taggart. Like, you just feel with them, because they started so poorly the season, those three games just suddenly became all, like, you have to win, you have to get basically 9 from 9, or at least like 7 points, right, out of 9, 6, something like that. Otherwise, there's no finals. But then it's like, far out, man. Like, if you actually played like you were, you know, a month ago, and you did that all season, like, Perth would probably be in the six, right? So, frustrating for them. All right, the Wanderers to finish. So, I'm going to say this straight away. Like, cracks papered over. Like, it's not... They're not out of the dark. Like, let's not kind of get carried away by one result here, right? Like, even Wanderers fans would surely have to admit, like, that was far from a convincing performance by them. I thought, like I said, first 20 minutes, I thought they were good. I thought they could have been maybe 2-0 up, to be honest with you. So, okay, you got to give them that. But, like, Rudin actually spoke before the game in his pre-match interview with the panel on 10. Paramount, whatever. And he spoke about how the frustration with conceding and then kind of conceding again. So kind of what happened in that West United loss where heads drop and they just keep dropping further, right? And that's what it felt like. It was kind of happening again where not so much where the performance dropped off, right? Suddenly, like inexplicably after 20 minutes, they just went back in their shells and Perth got back on top. And then the difference this time was Perth didn't punish them, right? And when Taggart scored, it's on the stroke of half time. And like I just said there, like the second half, I was just waiting for, okay, when are they going to either make the error that gives Perth a goal or when are Perth going to capitalize because this is only going one way. But look, they got a bit of luck, and in this league, you do need luck, right, to get results, and particularly when you're a bad run like they are. And they were able to kind of turn it into something the other way with that goal. But look, I'm not sitting here thinking like, oh, like, you know, the Wanderers are out of this and they're going to make the six now. Like, they've got their run home is actually like brutal. Like, they've got to go to MacArthur coming back from the international break. They've got Brisbane at home, who knows, like with Brisbane, right, that might be like a do or die for their season, so they might, you know, go to Western Sydney with it all on the line. Another derby, which is an away derby, who knows, they might win it. And then they finish with City at home, which is like, could be basically like a, whoever wins that finishes six, right? And then they finish with victory away. So there's no, like, it's not like they're going to play West United in there, or I mean, they just played West United and lost. Like, there's no Newcastle in there. There's no Adelaide. Like, there's no easy 3 points there, which there isn't in the A-League anyway, but there's no team there that you go like, oh, they can comfortably beat them. Like, no, right? And like, I find that hard to believe with all the noise that we heard during the week. And I know, like, when they got the second goal, like, there was big celebrations. Obviously, like, that's always going to happen with a team that clearly knows there's a lot of noise around them, right? But, like, I just don't see how deep some of the rumors were, right, that were going around with this team. I don't see how an unconvincing win like that is suddenly going to, you know, spring this team back into life, into being, you know, a team. Because that's the other thing with the Wanderers is if you're not... Like, Wanderers fans probably agree with this, right? Like, it's like for them, it's like they want to be competing. Like, it's getting the final. It's not getting the finals to make up the numbers. It's getting the finals to you know, be within a shot to win the championship. And I look at them and I think, look, unless you can get some more consistency from your senior players, or maybe some of these younger guys can show more in the end of the season, like, you're probably going to be in there to make up the numbers if you do get there anyway. Like, so there's that too. And then there's just more erratic behavior by Mark Rudin, right? Or Marco Rudin, where after the game, we got more ridiculous comments. It's like once a week now where I'll just read the comment again that Rudin said, post-match. I'm actually a coach that doesn't believe that a coach can lose the dressing room. I've never asked them to play for me. My role is to create an environment where they're improving every day. So, I've never asked them to play for me. My role is to create an environment where they're improving every day. Look, no problem with that. I'm not going to comment on, you know, internal issues or whatever at the Wanderers. Like, I don't have any information on that. And B, I'm not, I just don't think it's my place to really comment on that. But the first part, I'm actually a coach that doesn't believe that a coach can lose the dressing room. So, can we just get on top of this straight away, right? Like, it's Rudin, again, throwing out a comment. And it's let's get everyone to talk about this and what a ridiculous comment I just made, as opposed to talking about, you know, whether, you know, basically the issues, perceived issues at the club and rumors and all that sort of stuff. Like, so he knows what he's doing. He's throwing another comment out there. And look, if you're buying what he's selling, you know, just good luck to you. That's all I'm gonna say, because I mean, coaches do lose dressing rooms. Like, it's just that's not something that's up for debate. Like, if he doesn't think that, he doesn't believe in that, whatever. But I don't think anyone should be going, oh, he doesn't believe that, so maybe it's not true. Like, it's true. And it's actually a worrying thing to say. Like, you say that when there's basically been reports that you have lost the dressing room. I don't know if it's the right timing. Like, are we sure, you know, there's some certain senior players there who might have heard that comment post-match and just gone, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not even sure if I'm playing for you anymore, right? Like, I don't know, you know. So it's a weird comment. It's just a weird comment, which is what Rudin does, right? Okay. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. We will be back probably on Wednesday with something else, probably A-League related. I've got something in mind, and I've got a guest in mind. So probably, yeah, that hopefully maybe early Wednesday, probably later in the afternoon on Wednesday, you'll get the next episode. And like I said at the start, I'm going to do my best to stick to 3 a week. At the absolute least 2 a week, so you can get some constant sort of reaction and insight to you guys listening. So yeah, that's really it for this episode of the podcast. Make sure you are following us on social media. That's Front Page Football on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads, you know, everywhere. Follow us here on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to it. And give me some feedback. How do you think I am doing the solo recordings? Am I a disaster? Am I great? You know, do I hate the sound of my own voice too? Do I like the sound of my own voice too much? Sorry. Just let me know. I'm happy to reflect on the either criticism or praise. Anyway, now I'm talking too long. That'll do it. I'm your host, Christian Marchetti, and we'll be back on Wednesday.